It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And I think I just have to lead off with this one because this is one of those things that happens every year right around the end of May, first part of June, and that is the Canada tiger swallowtail butterfly, which is that big yellow and black one, emerges from its cocoon. And at the same time, the monarch butterflies arrive from migration. Now, all of this happened yesterday for me. I saw my first Canada tiger swallowtail butterfly yesterday. And while I was away from home, my wife saw the first monarch butterfly. Now, the Canada tiger swallowtail average first date is the 26th, so we nailed it right on the day. The average first date for the monarch butterfly is the 30th of May, so we were 4 days early on that one, and that is pretty consistent that they arrive about the same time. And the amazing thing is that the one comes from migration and the other comes from a cocoon, and they both arrive about the time that the lilacs reach their peak of bloom. And we are just shy of that right now, at least at my house. My lilacs are mostly open, but not fully open. So that is really interesting. By the way, the monarchs that we see are not the ones that spent the winter in Mexico. They don't migrate all the way back from Mexico to Minnesota. They come back to Texas or Oklahoma or Kansas maybe, and they lay an egg or eggs on milkweed plants, and then they die. And that caterpillar goes through its development stages, and then that monarch butterfly is the one that arrives here in northern Minnesota. So the monarch that you are seeing is the second generation of the ones that were in Mexico over the winter. So check them out. They should be around. I was talking to Dallas Hudson yesterday. He has not seen a monarch yet. He saw a Canada tiger swallowtail very early this year, like back in mid-May, which was way out of whack with all the data that we've collected. But between us and add in John Weber, who's another observer of butterflies, the three of us have observed the monarch and the Canada tiger swallowtails for, in my case, 40 some years, and they are almost always within a day or two of one another. So if I see one of those, I'm looking for the other. If I see a monarch butterfly, right away I'm keyed in to look for a Canada tiger swallowtail. Now, there's an eastern tiger swallowtail as well, and we are kind of on the mix. So if you're south of here, Brainerd, for example, or if you're listening down in Northfield where the Prairie Creek Community School is, you are probably seeing the eastern tiger swallowtail. Up this far north, more Canada tiger swallowtails, and the monarchs, of course, are undifferentiated. In the field of insects, over the last week, between Dallas and I, we have seen chalk-fronted corporal dragonflies, four-spotted skimmer dragonflies, beaver pond clubtail dragonflies, American emerald dragonflies, I've seen my first damselflies this past week. I didn't get an ID on the damselfly, small and dark. That's all I can tell you. The eastern-tailed blue butterfly, I found one of those out flying around. And I had a text which came at a propitious moment because a day before I got the text, I had seen the first tent of the American tent caterpillar. Now, this is not the forest tent caterpillar. This is the American tent caterpillar. And this one makes a small nest on usually on an apple or a prunus, maybe a choke cherry or a pin cherry. It makes a small nest. It's going to be roughly 6 or 8 inches long and maybe 4 or 5 inches wide. And it's a thick webbed nest. And the American tent caterpillars hide in there. They don't hide. I mean, you're not hiding when you have that kind of an apparatus, but you're protected. Any animal that might want to come and eat you is going to have to work pretty hard to get in there and get you. So the other thing about the American tent caterpillar is that it's not nearly as harmful as the forest tent caterpillar. You may want to get rid of them if they're on one of your apple trees. You may want to just take the branch or just clean out the spot, wash it with some insecticidal soap or something. But they are not going to like multiply and defoliate your forest. These are much more benign than their cousins, the forest tent caterpillars. So if you see those little web nests, why, you're looking at the American tent caterpillar. Among the other things that I ran into this past week, Canada goose molt migration. So maybe you have seen this as well. Maybe you've been outside in the last few days and you've heard these honking geese flying overhead, and you look up and there's a flock of 50 to 100 geese all headed north. These are molt migrators. So these are either unsuccessful geese that were trying to nest and failed, or they are young juveniles who have not yet begun to nest. At any rate, they are unfettered by goslings. And these geese gather in big flocks and they fly up into Canada. They find some rather remote lakes and they go through what is called an eclipse molt, where they drop all their feathers, all their flight feathers at once. And so they are unable to fly, and they hang around on these remote lakes in Canada in an effort to, suffer through this period of vulnerability. So watch for big flocks of geese heading north. Just a quick, I would call it a hearing test, I guess. Down at the lake, the green frogs have begun to sing. They're a couple of days early. The mink frogs are also singing, and they are like 6 days early. Still hearing a few spring peepers. I did not hear any wood frogs, nor chorus frogs, nor tree frogs. And the toads were singing before this last spite of cold weather, but they have sort of since gone quiet, and I expect that they're probably singing or will be singing very soon. And that is that really, really, really long trill. When you hear them, you're just going to think, oh my God, take a breath. It's just this long, goes on forever. So listen for that. That's the American toad. Should be singing in a pond near you. And you should get a chance to check them out. In the shrubs, my nannyberry, which is a opposite branched, fairly sturdy shrub. It is budded, covered in flower buds, and nothing is open yet. The pagoda dogwoods, same thing. Lots of flower buds, no open flowers yet. The flower buds were 11 days early. Juneberries are, it depends. Like, I have a varietal that's all done and has berries set already. And I also have in the woods wild juneberry that are just now in flower. So kind of a spread on the juneberries. Some are already done flowering and others are just at their peak. Choke cherries, they were 5 days early in their blooms, and they are blooming everywhere right now. The choke cherry blossoms look a bit like, they're shaped about like your thumb. They're about that big, and they're a cluster of white flowers, and you're going to see lots of them, these thumb-sized flower clusters all over the shrubs near you, and those are choke cherry. There's a bush out there called black chokeberry that is not at all the same as the choke cherry. And the black chokeberry, I have a varietal that is growing up by my house that is in full flower right now. And that was a day early. And I also have a native black chokeberry, which is much, much smaller. And the flowers are smaller. Everything about it is just more compact than the varietal that grows in my yard. But the black chokeberry, wild black chokeberry, are just budded. There's no flowers yet, and it'll be a while probably before we see flowers on those. If you've been out walking in the woods and you've come across those big four-petaled purple flowers, that's clematis. It is still blooming. I had it at peak bloom this past Saturday, and everywhere I walked in my woods, there were clumps of it. It's a vine, grows up over different plants and kind of hangs down. There's just a lot of clematis out there blooming right now. So get out and have a look at those. Among the flowers that I came across this past week, white campion, 2 weeks early, sheep sorrel. And I talked a little bit about this earlier, and I want to repeat this story because it really impressed me. But there was a young girl in fourth grade over in Cohasset, and she had asked me about a plant that was growing in her yard. She said, there's this patch of red plants in my yard. And I sort of had an idea what it was, but I couldn't come up with the name. It was like blank in my head. Anyway, she actually had taken two pictures of it. She took one picture from afar so you could see this patch of red in her green yard. And then she'd gone in and gotten a very nice close-up of the individual plant, which was absolutely astonishing to me because this is sort of what I've been working with these kids to do, to be aware of the place that they're at and to look at things. And she got it. She was there and she captured it. She did such a good job. I went home feeling really bad, and I dug into my notes. I made a very convoluted search of my notes, knowing that I had this plant and knowing that I should know the name of it. It is sheep sorrel, also called red sorrel. And if you're driving along this morning and you're going by a pasture, you probably are looking at some of it. It's these big patches of red out there. If you get out there, the plant itself is red, the flower is white, and the flower is so small that it takes like a 10-power hand lens in order to see the flower. And the flower is just a series of little white fingers, so sheep sorrel. And my highest regards and deepest respect for that young girl in Cohasset who so carefully documented the plant that she wanted to know. And I am sorry that I didn't have the name at the tip of my tongue, but she prompted me to get out, get busy, and figure it out for her. Starflower is blooming. That's that seven-petaled white flower. It's got a leaf that looks star-like in itself. It's the leaves are sort of oval, but they come to points, and they are just lovely. They are in bloom right now. They were 4 days early. Nodding trilliums are at their peak of flowering, and they're about 3 days ahead. The wood anemone, the windflower, that five-petaled white flower with the purplish-green leaves that lay down underneath it, is still in bloom, probably at its last peak. It's getting ready to close up for the season. These are spring ephemerals. These are the flowers that bloom really early in the year before shade becomes complete in the woods. The wood anemone is probably on its way out. There are lots of strawberries in bloom right now. There's a plant called Northern Wintercress. And if you're out and moving about, look for these clouds of tiny yellow flowers. The plants stand about 12 to maybe 15 inches high, and the flowers are very, very small, but they're bright yellow, and there are hundreds of them on each plant. So check those out. That's Northern Wintercress. Plant called Bastard Toadflax is in bloom, and that's about 6 days early. Wintercress, by the way, is 7 days late. So Dallas and I were talking about our records, and he was saying that his records were all over the place, that some were early and some were late, and he couldn't predict which was going to be which. They were just kind of all over the place. So seeing the same thing over here as well. Some plants are very early this year. Others are very late. The interrupted fern, which is that fern that has the dark, they're called sori, the spore-producing parts of the plant. They're quite dark green compared to the rest of the plant, and the interrupted fern now really lives up to its name. If you're looking at the frond, it comes up with these light green, I'm going to call them leaves. They're actually technically called pinnules. These leaves are interrupted by the dark green sori, the dark green spore-producing parts of that fern, hence the name interrupted fern. And if you're looking closely, you will notice that those sori are starting to mature. So yesterday, or Saturday rather, I noticed just a kind of a hint of brown as the spores began to mature in the interrupted fern. Ostrich fern and cinnamon fern and sensitive fern and lady fern are all up and unfurled and quite healthy looking. Also among those same plants are the equisetums. The field equisetum, Equisetum arvense, is up and developing. The fertile stems are gone. They came out early and left. But the sterile stems are there and can be easily observed. Red oak and bur oak both are done flowering. I couldn't raise any pollen on any of the catkins that I messed with. They are leafed out. The leaves are about half the size that they're going to be when they're full grown. They're about 7 days ahead of schedule in terms of leaf out. Big tooth aspen are quite pale green right now. Some are further along than others. I have a big mature one in my yard that is just now beginning to leaf out. It's still got a lot of leaf buds on it, but the overall color of the big tooth aspen this time of year is a very pale green. So check those out. Pretty easy to spot right now between them and the trembling aspen, which are pretty much green and almost fully leafed out. A lot of these plants that began to leaf out a month ago, first part of May, are almost done, almost completely full-sized leaves right now. So they get it done pretty fast, and then they spend the rest of the summer sort of gathering energy using those little factories that they have. Red maple are the female red maples are starting to have brown wings on their seeds as they mature. The red maples will drop their seeds in the summertime, and some of those seeds will actually germinate this summer and begin to grow as trees before fall. So a little unusual behavior on the part of the red maples. They get it done pretty early. Let's see, what other notes? Oh, I had gone with our friend Craig Bowron and a couple of his buddies down to Craig's farmhouse down in the Driftless area of Wisconsin. And this is 2 weeks ago now, and unfortunately last week I was I don't know, off my rocker or sick or something, and didn't mention the wonderful time that I had down there and the beautiful countryside, the big bluffs and the rushing little streams. And we drank from the springs that were on Craig's property, picked wild watercress and threw it in our water bottles along with that clean spring water and drank it down. It was delicious. Wild geraniums were in bloom down there. Skunk cabbage had long since been done blooming, but the leaves were there. Beautiful, big, bright green leaves on the skunk cabbage. Spring beauty, a flower that is not very common this far north. Sort of a bell-shaped flower. Sort of on the idea of it's a five-petaled flower, a bit like the flower of the the wood anemone, for example, except that someone has taken a very fine paintbrush and painted little thin pink lines on each of those white petals. So spring beauty is just gorgeous. And, of course, I mentioned the watercress as well. Just a real fantastic experience down in the Driftless area, and I can't wait to go back. That was really, really interesting country. That's the Phenology Show for this week. As always, if you have observations to share, please get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you.
It's 7:41. Thanks for tuning in. It's the Tuesday morning show on People Powered KAXE. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer. That Phenology report, you can get it through the Phenology podcast. Those are available on any place you might get your podcast from. That includes Amazon and YouTube and Google. They're all available.
Really?
There, John. Yes.
Oh, my word.
You are there. So
goodness.
Also sign up for that Season Watch newsletter. It's a great way to learn a lot each and every week. It comes out on Friday or Saturdays and brings us great stuff, thanks to Charlie Mitchell.
Yeah.
Check it all out. We also have a brand new newsletter, Ham Radio.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So go to our website, kexe.org. All you do is put in your address